Are you guys recording without me?
What? Yeah, we're done. We're already done.
No!
The analysis is complete and it was good.
Mm-hmm.
The score, 5-4-5.
My pen go.
Oh. I was playing with it.
Playing with the boss's pen, huh?
Yeah.
Scooch!
All right. We're here now. It's time.
It's time.
It's time.
Eric, are you recording?
KT is recording.
I am?
You started it.
I just pressed record because I noticed you hadn't. You brought it up and everything.
What a spat we're having.
See if I can just nail it if I don't think about it too much. All right, I'm just going to go right into it after this sentence.
I'm sure you will nail it.
Now and now. Do 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 do. Do,
do. That was one of the more somber versions of that intro I think we've had. Mm. Jeez.
I mean, it's because of that tequila sunrise I had. More of a tequila sunset. You know what I mean? Welcome to Ever Would, Never Wouldn't, a podcast where I, Adam Lover, make my friends watch... Wait.
Uh-oh, tequila sunrise.
But Adam, who are your friends?
My friends.
Eric.
And KT.
And occasionally my boyfriend.
Jerome, hello.
Watch and discuss with me the first season of the hit early 2000s WB teen slash family drama Everwood. Now available on HBO Max.
Wow.
You assume that it's available when we release this?
Never.
Two years. The episode we're discussing tonight, season one, episode 19, The Miracle of Everwood, written by Michael Green, directed by Arlene Sanford. Original air date, April 21st, 2003. Mm. Interesting. That means that there was a break between the unveiling was, it aired February 24th.
Yeah, I knew it was February.
So they took two months off.
Hmm. Was that like a thing?
Sometimes that happens, I guess.
I would have almost been graduated high school at this time. Just 2 months away from graduation.
Wow.
When was sweeps? Remember when sweeps was a thing?
I heard the term.
I always thought it was in the fall.
Sweeps and TV.
Oh, like the ratings or whatever?
Nielsen ratings are taken in February, May, July, November. So it's likely that they took a break so that they would be airing the end of the season in May. Yeah, they probably, I'm almost certain that that's what it was. That's why they took a break.
God.
And they certainly came back with quite an episode.
Oh, yeah. The official DVD booklet episode description for The Miracle of Everwood. The golden boy of Everwood is back and better than ever. That's what everyone wants to believe, including perhaps a well-regarded New York journalist who stumbles onto the story of Colin's recovery.
Yep, that's what happened.
It is.
I remember last week when we recorded, KT, your initial prediction was that The Miracle of Everwood was going to be about something completely, like a new kind of character or something. But then you revised it. You were like, no, wait, it's got to have to do with like Colin or some shit.
Yeah.
It was almost about that guy in the tree. So you were close.
It was almost about the guy in the tree who lived in that tree for 4 weeks, apparently.
Yep.
Yeah.
We will get to that. Overall, that's the big story in this episode is dealing with Colin. And so, and like, yeah, we'll talk about it. To what extent for you guys, did you think that this felt, I mean, because based on what we've been discussing around Colin, like, it's very obvious to us, right, as viewers, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
So, like, was it frustrating to watch an episode that seemed, from that perspective, to be kind of spinning its wheels and just kind of develop an angle of the plot that, like, we as viewers don't necessarily need developing? Was that frustrating?
I think the angle that I think the angle that it did develop was how he it's not just this secret thing, like, it's something that's going to start affecting the people around him.
Right.
That was the whole idea, and how people will deal with that, you know, when it's that in their face.
I don't begrudge it developing another more dangerous aspect of this brain injury thing that's obviously developing, but my problem was that it was the whole fucking episode. I'm like, it's already been set up, like, obviously something's going to go wrong. Just have half the episode be all of a sudden an explosive episode. The office thing would have been enough, but then he beats up his friend. Okay, fine. Like, do we really need to stretch this out?
I appreciated, like, seeing, like, how, for example, like, just non-close adults in his life deal with it, like the principal and the teacher versus
this seems
Amy again, but versus this seems Ephraim so contrived or Bright. To me, like,
again, it's like, it's
a TV show.
Yes,
it's almost like it was written by people. Like, they contrived it to play out in a certain way.
You fucking but
that
assholes.
Is annoying to me too, KT.
No, it's, I hate so you.
It almost seems scripted, if that's me.
No, this thing about every single adult in his fucking life is an idiot. I'm sorry. Every single person along the line is justifying this extremely ridiculous behavior that has been escalating, and they're just smoothing it over and smoothing, and only treat Williams as the one who knows.
And Ephraim.
Okay. It's so unrealistic to the point of obnoxiousness. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know that it's unrealistic, because the last 4 years have shown me just how, like, fucking in denial people can be.
I would say probably, like, any kind of teen football movie that you were watching around that time would have addressed almost the same thing of, like, a player having some issue that everybody knows about, but, like,
Varsity Blues.
Was that right around that time?
I don't remember.
Yes, but in those cases, they're trying to get the kid to play or the player to play to benefit the team. They're not, in this case, they won't even let him play. They're just going, look at these crazy. Yeah, and then they're giving in to demands. It was so absurd. It's absurd.
I was going to say, I mean, look, the NFL is an entire fucking institution built around ignoring serious brain injuries. Mm-hmm. What I did like in this episode was that the gym teacher initially is like, he's kind of a dick about not letting Colin play. Like, his tone is, like, off, but he's like, no, like, you need a doctor's note.
I mean, he was a dick, but, like, I think it was, like, a normal reaction. Cause, like, it was someone who's not, like, babying him. Yeah. He's like, well, Colin, I don't know. He was treating him like a kid, like a normal kid who doesn't have a doctor's note. So he can't play.
Exactly.
He was like, that was.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that, like, then later on, it seems like it's possible that basically he got pressure from the principal, like, hey,
but
you know.
For what though?
Yeah.
Like,
that was so weird to me.
Yep.
I don't see why everybody is pandering so much to this fucking kid. Does he have dirt on everybody? Well, he can't remember it anyways if he did.
He can't remember it anyway. Probably Wendell does. Maybe he, like, has all of his evidence on everybody. He has, like, Wendell's storing it for him somewhere. It is the theme of the episode. It's the whole idea of, like, Irv's narration is all about people ignoring the truth and wanting to paint reality the way they want it to be.
With the principal, like, it really seemed like it was to the point where, like, his parents, like, are donors to the school, and, like, he didn't want to tip the apple cart. Like,
It's also very possible
that, like, I wonder, by that point in the episode, everybody knows that I mean, this is like headcanon. Like, right, everybody knows that this big New York journalist is in town, so that could be part of it. They're, like, they assume, right, that the story is going to be about Colin, so, like, they don't want to rock that boat. Like, and also just in general, right, like, they just feel like, you know, Colin's our miracle. Colin's, you know, this is amazing, and we don't want to fucking, like, fuck up that narrative for ourselves.
I think the scene right before the principal's talk they didn't show us is when Colin threatened the principal with a bat. And he said, look, when we go back in there, you better change your
tone. I don't know what this is that I'm holding. I don't remember the word for this thing.
This water that I'm holding here.
Well, exactly. So, yeah, so interesting. Yeah, like, totally, like, I get everybody's takes on this for sure.
But you're wrong.
But you are all wrong. No, I'm right. Yes. Well, so the episode starts off with a nice little flashback to Colin and Bright as kids. They're playing basketball. We get Irv's narration. Sometimes you have to believe in what isn't there. All right. We get a nice little tie-in to the whole, like, source of Amy's Grover nickname.
Yeah, she had to be holding it, of course.
Holding the Grover doll, like, of course. I do like the moment where Colin tells her to shut up. And she runs inside. It's like, Mom, Bright hit me. Like, it's like perfect little, like,
turn of a kid.
And then in present day, Colin and Bright are playing basketball, and Colin loses his sling, and Irv's narration says something about the universe throwing a kind miracle your way. Oh, everything's going to be fine. Colin's recovering. Everything's going to be okay.
I can never pay attention to Irv's narrations in those types of scenes.
Me neither.
It's such a skill that Adam has to be able to listen to and then be able to apply that to the episode. Because I'm just like, you heard words?
No. Yeah, I can't do it. Yeah, like, if it's just like mountains, then sure, I can listen to it.
Right.
This is literally just like storytelling, like narration.
No, I don't know that it's anything wrong. I just am too focused on the scene. Yeah, like in the landscape shots, fine, I can listen to the narration. I mean, but
right. You know. Granted, I'm sure it helps that this is like the eighth time I'm watching the show.
Yes.
But also, I would encourage you all to like pay attention to narration in stories. It's often important. Thematically, KT's like processing that like the woman in the like with the math equations meme, like what?
No, I think they were just trying to figure it out if they heard words right just then or not.
No, I heard it all and I was like, I know what a narrator is. And that's all I could think, so I just said nothing.
You played the narrator.
In what? Oh, Rocky Horror. Mm-hmm. I did.
Aw, that's cool. I don't really care, but that's cool. Let's follow Colin's story, just because it's the most kind of obvious and like whatever. We see Ephraim and Amy in chorus. They're not singing, and the teacher doesn't care.
Oh my god.
Why do they have those stupid scenes?
Yeah.
Well, again, they're showing, right, they're establishing. Colin shows up. I need Amy right away. She needs to play hooky the rest of the afternoon. And the teacher just ignores it.
That was crazy.
It's, you know, yes, it's like cartoonish levels of this town, this community, and the adults being like, whatever. But like, I don't mind it. Like, it is ridiculous.
It was
but
okay
like,
with that teacher because
she's
weird.
Dotty. Yeah, she's, you know, she's kind of
also. Did they have to pay, do you think they had to pay for the rights for the Cheers theme?
I know.
I love that they were singing the Cheers theme song. Maybe it was like a different enough arrangement from the actual theme song that they didn't have to. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
I don't know.
Also, off camera, Colin threatened the drama teacher too. So.
He had a gun pointed right under the frame.
I like this headcanon.
I'm carrying the lead here, but I just have a thing about like slick back hair, and I'm noticing that Colin has slick back hair, and that's always indicative to me of like a character that's gone dark. You know,
Shit.
First thing to go is like the hair back or whatever. I'm like, this guy Joker to me now.
Yep. His hair is. You pointed at his hair once while we were watching. I was like, I wrote down Colin's hair? ?
Yes.
Like, let's bring this up because I have no idea what we're trying to say.
His dark progression.
Uh huh.
Ephraim is in the locker room. He's the one who sees Colin destroying the gym teacher's office, which earns him a spot, a very important storytelling spot in the principal's office when they confront
him. Zero
sense. During the Council of Colin or whatever.
I'd much rather we weren't in this position. There is a very short list of things we do not and cannot tolerate from our students. Destruction of property tops that list, and that's what you saw. Right. We know you've been through a lot this year. And with the obstacles you've had to face, it's no surprise that certain frustration can become, well, unbearable. Not that that's an excuse. Nevertheless, if I understand this correctly, this incident was not without provocation.
Benching you, that wasn't exactly sensitive of me. I was doing a bunch of stuff at once, and I'm sorry, Colin.
Okay, then. Fortunately, no one was hurt in this. And since nothing of value is damaged, I don't think it's necessary to get parents involved. Perhaps it's best if we just put this whole incident behind us. Agreed?
Sure. So that's it?
Yes, Ephraim. That's it.
I love that the principal said, there's a very short list of things that we can't accept.
Yep.
And destruction of property is one of them. I'm like, there's a very short list? You'd think there would be a long list of things that you technically can't accept from your students.
But also we'll accept this one.
Yeah.
That is the upshot of the scene. It's like, oh. The list got shorter.
It used to be long. Colin did everything on it.
So now we have to accept it. I love that. Destruction of property, which is what you saw, Ephraim, which is why you're in the scene.
Which was the dumbest fucking line. Which was what you saw. It was literally the only effort they put into addressing why Ephraim's there.
Hey, it's economics of storytelling.
No!
They need Ephraim to be there to see it, to kind of push.
So what the events have happened is like, everybody came rushing in and still saw Colin doing it.
Yes.
So whether or not Ephraim was there, the whole team saw.
Yeah.
You fucking snitch!
I mean, you know what, like, would be... I mean, I kind of like the idea that maybe Ephraim was, like, trying to be a good friend and was like, no, like, I'm coming in. Like, he's still trying to be helpful with Colin, and especially because he knows that, like, something is off with Colin. Mm-hmm. It might be that he was, like, I saw it. I'm coming in. You know what? I don't know how you would like advocate for your presence in the principal's office, but like if it came from that, like I think that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. That was my thought while it was happening, but that wasn't established directly.
Yeah. Not without provocation. Yeah, it's the gym teacher's fault. Teacher apologized. Ephraim's face is like, what the fuck? And then he basically says, like, what the fuck? That's it?
Yeah.
You're just gonna let him go? Like, he destroyed a teacher's office. Which then feeds into the next scene where he goes over to Ephraim. He's like, why'd you try to sell me out? It's cool, you know, I like seeing Ephraim confront Colin and call him out about this and then, like, destroying the trophy case earlier in the season.
Hey, what's going on? You wanna shoot some hoops?
It's all right, I'm on dinner duty. Delia starts scarfing down the sugar cereal if I'm not quick with the takeout.
You know, yesterday in Ackerman's office, why'd you try to sell me out?
I didn't sell you out.
That's it? I mean, what was that?
Well, it caught me off guard. And you gotta admit, it was pretty messed up.
Yeah, it's no big deal.
No big deal? You took a bat to the gym teacher's office.
Hey, he started it.
What about the car window? Did he start it too? Or the trophy case? Yeah,
I figured it out.
All right, I'm not stupid.
Hey, listen, man, I'm fine. I mean, I wasn't for a long time, but I beat it, you know? I mean, I can read, I can hold numbers in my head, I can bench press 160. You know, I lost a lot, but I can make new memories, man. I'm doing good again.
Yeah, you're doing good. But that guy in there with the bat, It wasn't you.
Right, so I lost it. But I got it under control. Fine. You can keep me in line. You can help me.
Help you cover?
God, would you get over this? You know, the rest of the world already has.
Maybe if I knew you when you were still the Golden Boy, I could ignore it too. But right now, you scare me.
Okay. If that's the way you want it.
That's not much of a choice.
You know, what is this? Some pathetic last-ditch effort to get me off Amy? I ought to get her to think that I'm still being spoon-fed applesauce? You know, no wonder my sister took off and left you alone.
You believe whatever you want. The rest of the world already does.
Hey, come on, wait, don't, Ephraim! Dude, it's not what you think! Did you watch? I'm not like that! I'm not like that!
Which, you know, you can kind of, we can kind of tell, like, yes, Colin is angry, but he's also, like, hurt and confused himself. We see it in the scene a little bit, we see it later on. Amy comes to find Ephraim playing piano, says, Colin said you tried to get him busted. They're trying to loop it back into, like, when she says, it's your fault. You're the one who told me to have faith in Colin and to stick with him. And that's what I'm doing.
I liked what he was playing in that scene. Playing.
What do you say? Like, whoever wrote it or played it was, like, did so to try to, like,
make it so nobody else could or whatever.
Or get out of the real world or something. When he needed to ignore the real world. Which is interesting because that also, like, ties in thematically with everybody else is trying to ignore reality.
He just also like Norman Rockwell.
Just like Norman Rockwell. Then Ephraim's like trying to order a fucking pizza at a pizza place, and Colin is just being a dick and giving him a hard time.
Yeah. Hardcore.
Ephraim calls Bright Dumbo, which is fun.
Yeah, I think Ephraim can chill on all the name calling. Like, it's certainly not gonna get you punched in the face, calling people Dumbo and stuff, you know?
It's true.
Not saying that he can't feel a little heightened, but
I don't think that's what got him punched in the face.
No. But if I were Bright, I would have been just like, maybe Colin can have a couple seconds with you.
But Bright's used to it. And you know what, I kinda like this scene for the fact that, yes, Colin, like, fucking grabs Ephraim, pushes him up against the car, holds his arm behind his back, and, like, Bright is the one who, like, pulls him off. Like, Bright's not being the bully from, like, the pilot episode. He's like, no, dude, like, back off. And this is what I do like about the show taking an episode to, like, explore this is specifically the relationships and how the relationships shift and change.
Exactly.
Like, after this episode, Ephraim is definitely, like, once and for all off boat Colin, and also Bright is too, which is like, you know, these are big shifts that are going to, like, I think feed into the dynamic going forward in the show.
Yep.
So yeah, Colin punches Bright like several times, his face and it's, you know, it's fucked up, but I, you know,
Bright's tough.
Yeah.
Like, he was on his feet for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was several punches.
Total Boromir moment.
Yeah.
What's also tough is that, like, it's rough seeing, like, Bright get punched, at least for me, because it's like, oh, he just helped Ephraim. But we love seeing Chris Pratt get punched.
Yes. I was very excited. That was a very good scene.
Or prattling on with Katie, talking about Chris Pratt's deficiencies. He got punched in this episode, so let's go to Katie and talk about storytelling modes.
Oof. I heard episode. I'm like, he's in trouble. It's not going to work in Toad anytime soon.
I thought he was going to say something like, come a big load or something. That would be something Adam would say.
I'll save that for next week.
Okay.
So Chris Pratt has been kind of in the news lately.
Again?
I mean, I think hasn't it been since last week that, like,
the thing with his
people
brother.
Were just canceled? Like,
again?
Like, just he didn't do anything, people just got interested again in like, Chris Pratt sucks. So they
because it's just the more time that passes and the more time he does not just fucking come out and say, hi, everybody. You know, my friends have tried to defend me. And I need to just fucking realize that, guess what? Like, I need to come out and say, the church that I love sucks in this regard. Gay people are great. Trans people are great. Like, fuck the church in that regard. I do not agree with that. Thank you for your time. Like, it would take him 30 fucking seconds. He could make an Instagram post, but he hasn't, because guess what? Just like his brother is an alt-right fucking crazy nutbag.
An article from literally, we're recording this on February 9th.
Yeah.
An article from yesterday. The headline is, Chris Pratt's brother, a Bay Area officer, may support a far-right extremist group.
I read it because I wanted to see if it was just clickbaity. And it, like, as far as I mean, I didn't see the posts. I haven't seen whatever the fuck they're talking about. But they did say that his social media accounts have all been, like, deleted. So guess what? That's, like, Disney damage control. That's what that is. This guy is fucking, he, like, funded someone's plane ticket to the fucking insurrection or some shit. That's what I swear to God, fuck that guy. And he is Chris Pratt's brother, and they're bestie friendies because they're bros, big white Christian bros. And so they are fucking turd bags. You look at the picture. God damn it. All right. Can we just,
looks like the journalist in this episode.
Yes, he does.
And well, yeah. Can you believe their dad is Tom Amandes? It's so crazy.
God, poor Tom Amandes had to work with Chris Pratt.
That's a bit, buddy. Well, this has been Prattling On with KT.
Fuck that guy.
Chris Pratt is a dick and a fiend. Yeah, I got somewhere. Jesus Christ.
Woo!
Woo!
All right. All right. So Chris Pratt got punched.
Mm-hmm. It was great.
Chris Pratt got punched, which was great.
And then Amy saw his wounds.
And she
and suggested that he lie about his abuse.
Amy's the worst. Okay, I don't like Chris Pratt, but I think I might like Amy less.
So everybody but Adam can weigh in on this, because he'll probably know.
Okay.
Is it just me, or did this episode, and maybe a little bit before this one, but definitely this one, does it feel like it's leading up to him, like, hurting her?
Yes. Absolutely.
She's the only one left that hasn't been, like, hurt.
Right, and he's, like, assuring her so many times that he's in control and everything's about her. Brother
or something else. It's either going to be her, or it's going to be someone she cares about that severely gets hurt because of him.
Something I am comfortable spoiling is that Colin and Amy go for a little joyride. Mm. Colin's driving, and Amy falls into a coma as a result of a car accident.
Awesome.
Well, like, they see one next to them, and she's just so surprised that she just falls into a coma.
They see a car accident, and Amy's like, oh!
Oh my god, that was the perfect sound effect for falling into a coma. I need to put that on my pork fried dice soundboard.
Amy being forced to consider the realities and plight of other people for the first time. And that sends her. Well, the scene with Amy is, you know.
You okay? What happened?
Nothing. Colin.
What did you do?
What did I do?
What did you say? You probably said something completely inappropriate.
You blaming this on me? Look at what he did to me. Colin did this. I don't like it any more than you, but he has got some serious problems.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, come on, Amy. How can you be so clueless? You're not talking to Dad because of Colin. Now you're going to blame this on me? You've got to stop. Okay, you've seen him. You know he is not the person we grew up with. If he was, I wouldn't still miss him.
This is when he needs us, Bright. Can't just give up on him now.
Yes, I can.
Bright? Bright, please. Please, just don't tell Dad. Tell him it was from a game that you fell. Please.
And I do like the line that Bright has about, like, he's not the same him. Because if he was, I wouldn't still miss him. Or like if he's not, if he was okay, I wouldn't still miss him. Mm. And like that's, I think that's revealing. Like Bright this whole time has missed Colin. Mm-hmm. Which is, I guess, I mean, now that I say it out loud, that's not that great. It's like, hey, somebody can be different and you can still like be friends with them. I don't know.
You can, but you're still allowed to miss the person if it was a, if they were a different person before something happened.
Stop defending Chris Pratt.
Oh, I know. Fuck Chris Pratt. I'm just saying. Theoretically. It's too contrived.
And then, yeah, by the end of the episode, Bright is avoiding Colin.
Yeah.
Yep. Amy's doubling down and supporting Colin. Colin's like, does all of your family, like... hate you now
he or starts whatever. Doing like, really darkly manipulative shit because
Amy's like, well, it's down to my mom, dinner's getting pretty tense, and Colin's like, they're just trying to get between us.
Mm-hmm.
That it's is
really another level of darkness. Mm-hmm. Like that is like,
and that's when Jerome pointed at his hair.
That was the moment for me. I was just like, yo, what is he saying to her? Like, why is he acting? There's a thing of like having a rage fit, but then also to be carrying on this extra stuff. Like he's not in a heightened state right now. So why is he saying stuff like this? Mm-hmm. Like why is I would almost expect him to just be like, I'm so sorry. I promise I wasn't doing blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. But instead he's just like, so your family sucks. Like they're fucking what?
Yeah, you don't need them. You just need me.
Yep, exactly.
That's that was really, I think, what I was like, oh, this is like leading up to fucking
right, yes.
domestic abuse or whatever. No shit.
Prediction noted.
Did you write it down?
So the other big, I've got it in my head.
So you didn't write it down. Got it.
Yeah, but I wrote it on my forehead. See?
Do it like right now.
Takes the order down in his head and he's like, don't worry, I got it, don't worry.
Yep, I said curly fries, you fuck.
So the other big thing in this episode is the big city journalist who's come to write about Andy. We learn about that in a diner scene with Andy and Harold, which is always fun.
Denver omelet, please. Or maybe I want the French toast. I'm a little short on time. How long does the French toast take?
Not as long as you're taking to order it. What's the rush, doctor?
French toast. Some magazine is sending a guy to interview me.
Well, I wouldn't get too excited. It's hardly rare for some local birdcage liner to want to fill the space between the Friday crossword and the tuna frittata recipe with whatever profile they can muster. It's what rag is selling ad space on your dime.
New York Magazine. You ever heard of a guy named Joel Hurwitz? Oh, so you know his work?
Joel Hurwitz covered Rwanda. Last year alone, he interviewed Arafat and Brad and Jennifer. His piece on repressed renewables research was nominated for the Pulitzer in 98. He was robbed when they gave it to that drivel on antibiotic levels in the soil. Probably the only living American writer to win the Penn Faulkner Award who's bothered to read Faulkner. He's coming here to interview you?
Oh, it's no big deal. I promise the editor I'd do it. He's an old friend of mine. Hurwitz is just going to follow me around for a couple of days. Said he wanted to do a piece on the city mouse turned country doctor.
I accepted the fact that life stopped being fair to me long ago, but really this is too much for anyone.
Well, who knows? Maybe you'll say something interesting while he's in town and he'll quote you.
You know, that would be something. You know, Joe, the country doctor is more than just a healer. He's an institution. That's good. You there, coffee man, pen, fast. Institution.
Harold is like continuously just like choking on his food or his drink because he knows Joel Hurwitz.
He made that coma sound a couple times.
Joel Hurwitz covered Rwanda. He interviewed Brad and Jennifer.
What a weird reference for Dr. Abbott to say.
No, but like I think that he's displayed an interest in like celebrity.
Uh-huh.
Culture before. I think it's come from the same place as his interest in like musicals and shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's an outdated reference because Brad and Jennifer, when did they break up?
I don't know. Sometime after Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Okay, Google. When did Brad and Jennifer Lopez break up? It is Jennifer Lopez, right?
No. Nope.
Yeah, it definitely is.
It is definitely not.
Wait.
It's Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lopez.
Oh my God.
Brad and Jennifer. Oh, it's Jennifer from
Aniston,
Friends.
Aniston. I thought you were joking.
He was in Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Angelina. Jennifer Aniston. Angelina Jolie.
Adam, wait, what's Jennifer? Going on with you?
Wait,
the
no.
point was, Adam, the point was that he did the movie with Angelina Jolie and then everyone thought they were together and then they probably did have an affair and that's why they broke up.
Listen, in your defense, Adam, when I said Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I forgot that that wasn't Jennifer Aniston.
You did?
Yep. And it was him with someone he was in a relationship with and I was like, oh, it must be that.
What's interesting is that in the last day or two of when we're recording this, February 9th, there have been like headlines about Brad and Jen caught kissing on set. Jeez. Jennifer Aniston reignites Brad Pitt romance rumors in new Instagram posts.
I feel like that's literally every week.
No, but so ever no,
in the past 20 years. I'm not
ever
kidding.
More timely than ever.
It's true.
That's what I'm saying. In the scene in the diner, I love that Andy, this is a very fun part of the episode that this kicks off when Andy's like, hey, maybe you'll say something interesting while he's in town and he'll quote you.
Oh, Dr. Abbott.
Immediately we see that this is exactly what Tom Amandes' contributions to this episode is going to be. He does not know the name of the man behind the counter at the diner. He says,
he probably does.
Coffee man. Give me a pen.
Yeah, that's bullshit. He seems like the kind of person that, like, if somebody new got hired, he would make it a point to know their name just so he could harass them. There's no way he doesn't know the name of every
but
clerk
it's
in that
funnier
shop.
For him to call him Coffee Man. Mm-hmm. Edna. Andy tries to get rid of Edna. Edna's not terribly interesting this episode, so I'll just skip her. Sorry, Edna.
Well, I have a note about her about it at the end. So just let's just set it up. Yeah, she, for some reason, is not a fan of this journalist guy. Go on.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I do like the dialogue where she's like, are you trying to get rid of me? And Andy says, no. Are you lying to me? Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, now that I read that out loud, I don't think I like that dialogue. I just realized, no, that's the opposite. I kind of don't like it. It's a bit cutesy.
It's very cutesy. I like it when Edna and Andy are cutesy.
I think it establishes them being like, it's like a parental thing. It's cute. Yeah.
All right. Then I guess I like it.
Like he like pretends to tiptoe around her, but he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
God, now I know how y'all feel when I'm trying to convince you to like stuff.
No, you don't.
How could I? The journalist shows up, Joel Hurwitz. He's a goober.
I don't like this guy.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, weird, just like,
I guess maybe we're kind of not supposed to with the way that the story turns out, but
maybe.
I don't know, man.
It's like the big city-ness of him, I guess.
He was dead from below his lower eyelids to the top of his upper lip. This space of his face did not emote. No. Hey, excuse me, you moron. All of these things matter.
Hey,
smiles.
I prefer Dumbo.
It matters. It's this space right here. Cheekies. And he just, it doesn't move. The flesh doesn't move. And he always looked angry. What
I think
the
that's
fuck?
What it is to be an objective journalist, you know, like can't even emote, or else that makes you subjective somehow.
That actor's name is Rob Nagel.
I don't like you, Rob.
Yeah,
sorry, Rob.
Yes, I've seen him in Mad Men and The West Wing, also. But yeah, future guest of the podcast, Rob Nagel. Why is your face dead? What happened?
Just your nose and cheeks.
Just your nose and cheeks.
Yeah, no, I just, the whole episode, like, yeah. It felt like, I think one of you, someone, I think, I don't remember who, like, it was like something sinister.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was like, literally, like, it felt like he was up to something bad.
Yep.
Yeah, weird. Weird little
which wasn't true. I don't know.
Weird casting decision. Mm. It's distracting.
Yes.
Andy takes him for a little tour of the town. He points across the street. That's where the other doctor is. But he's more of a misplaced city dweller than a corncob pipe kind of guy.
And here we have the unattended fruit stand, which no one would even consider stealing from. Apple?
Sure.
Hi, Martha.
Nice to see you, Doctor. That's Martha Thompson. The Martha Thompson, four-time winner of the Rocky Mountain Chocolate Cake Off. Okay. Bye.
Journalists can have a Heisenberg effect. It wears off eventually.
Well, fortunately, we got Irv Harper. Lucky husband and I nurse and guaranteed normal person.
You ever Woody's wiggly for attention?
No idea.
Just a smidge.
Well, I never cared much for mainstream journalists myself. One of them could come into town, set on writing about one thing, and completely miss the more captivating story about the lone black man living in a racially homogenous town. But if anyone wanted to talk about it, I'd probably be open for discussion.
I love that 19 episodes in, the show kind of gets meta about Irv.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to reveal more about what Edna's deal was. Like, I thought he was, like, holding some grudge about... Like, he was saying, you could miss the story, and I'm like, oh, shit. Like, he missed something that she cared about. No, there's just more of the...
Just a race joke. Mm-hmm. The journalist is obviously curious about why Andy is in Everwood. He's interviewing him later. Your dad was an auto... I like these details about Andy's life.
Yep.
Dad was an auto mechanic, best in Rhode Island. That he worked on French cars exclusively because they were the hardest to get right.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a fun Kurt interaction with Ephraim as he walks in. Because Andy's like, you know, I got my kids and we have our good days and our bad days. And there's the nice rhythm of like, hi, okay. You go in your room? Yep. You want to talk? Nope.
No, he said totally.
He's
leaving the room.
And then, yes, we get Harold in the diner. It's fun. He's all dressed up as like a country doctor.
Yes.
Ah, Robert, Troy, now you two are still taking the vitamins like I told you. Huh? Good lad, good lad. There's a sucker for each of you. There you go. Susan? Ah, well met, fellow healer.
Same to you. Joel, this is Harold Abbott, the other doctor in town.
The other doctor. Enjoying your time with our Dr. Brown here? Oh, he's come a long way. Had a lot to learn from me about how to be a country doctor. Here, in the country, where the very air has a palliative effect on most ailments. Yes, well, love to stay and chat, but I've got an office chock full of patients requiring my attention. Hate to keep any of them waiting. After all, you never know which case is going to turn out to be the one that you became a doctor for. Mr. Hurwitz, if you have any questions at all about anything, even about Dr. Brown, don't hesitate to call.
I just might do that.
Many patterns on. He's got the bow tie and the shirt and the hat and the jacket. All are four different patterns.
That's perfect. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Trying way too hard.
Gotta rein it in.
Very funny. He like goes up to a couple kids. He's like, here, have some suckers.
Yep.
Which the sponsor of tonight's episode is Everwood Suckers. Are you a country doctor who really wants to live in a city, but a journalist has just come to town and you want to be quoted in his article? And so you want him to think you're a genuine country doctor? Well, have we got the thing for you? Everwood Suckers. They're lollipops, but you can give them to kids. And if you call them suckers, then it'll make you seem like a country doctor. Everwood Suckers. Everwood sucks here.
I was gonna go with Everwood suckers when you need to sucker a sucker.
Ooh, yeah.
Adam, he's way better at this than you.
No, that
I was able
right.
to do a second pass because
no,
you did
that seemed like showing off. Like my pass was this rambling 45 seconds.
Exactly.
I don't have a bit, but I'm gonna pretend like I have a bit, followed by you just having this perfectly concise joke.
Distilled. You were feeding it to me, I was distilling it down.
I'm mad. We're fighting.
Good.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. I love Harold saying, well met, fellow healer.
Yes. God. Oh my God. It was the cheesiest. Oh my God.
And he's
trying
so hard to be quoted. What I love about the direction of the scene is like all the up close shots of the notebook.
Yes.
And the still pad. Writing. And even the fact that like that Andy himself like knows what Harold is doing. So at the end, like looks down at the notebook, just grinning. He's not writing anything.
Wearing a knowing wry smile the whole time.
Fun times. It's worth noting for the episode that Andy's exit after his scene with Edna in the doctor's office earlier is one of the gifts I made, my Everwood gifts tumbler.
Yep. It's
because he's got this big dumb grin on his face. It's fun times. We see Andy treating a guy up in a tree. Apparently this guy's been living there for 4 weeks in protest of the construction crew chopping it down. So that's cool.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's only happened so that the journalist can be down on the ground
to talk to some random
to random construction workers. Like, well, this must be one of Dr. Brown's more memorable patients.
You think this is memorable? Doesn't compare at all to Colin Hart.
Let me give you this prepared speech I have about the miracle of Colin Hart.
Well, it was Independence Day, right? Oh my God. Look, the town has had to practice this. Everybody know what happened? And Independence Day.
Well, I think it's realistic. People know their stories. They're little small towns. They have ways
of papers.
It's oral history. It's oral storytelling. It's why Plato did it. Not Plato, Homer.
Plato.
Harold gets Bright to help with interview prep. This is
here
when
we go.
Bright's like, what are your feelings on homos?
Oh, I think I asked him to add that joke in.
Yep.
He said, look, you guys let me get one homophobic joke a season.
Yep.
And this is it.
I think it just was unscripted. I think
yes, he ad lib.
Thought it was homos. And Tom Amandy says, like, that's HMOs, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't even think they were filming. He was just asking Tom.
What are your thoughts on homos? Because we don't have any homos in the show yet, right? They're not going to. You guys aren't going to write any homos into the show, are you, Greg Berlanti? Known homo?
Except for the guy who
coffee guy
enthralled with the journalist because he's met Celine Dion. Tell me that's not like a specific sort of thing to say.
You're but right.
Who was that? Who's enthralled?
Somebody at the
coffee shop. The guy at the coffee shop, yeah.
Coffee guy,
He's like, you met Celine, or this is for free,
he's
or
like,
whatever he says.
Anything for somebody who's met Celine.
Yeah. So your money's not good here.
Yeah.
Joel, the journalist, calls the Abbott household. I like the little shot of Bright giving his dad a little one thumbs up, like, hey, yeah, good for you.
You did it. I don't have to talk to you anymore.
He wants to talk to Amy instead. So he interviews Colin and Amy. Amy had to hurt his job. She's had to deal with all the changes. What changes? This is gross. He's less ticklish. He bites his nails and he kisses different.
Uh-huh.
And Joel, in a supreme act of grace, this is like, oh, like better. I just found my lead. Like, this is what the story's about. How does this teen boy kiss different now? Better? Is it wetter and louder?
Yep, it is.
Hand up the bed, like starting with their feet, and we could hear them, their loud wet making out the whole time.
You missed it, Jerome.
Yeah, that's so sad.
I'm sad.
I'll demonstrate it for you later.
Slower.
And of course, Amy is obviously a quotable line when she says, all I knew was that I loved him. Love made more sense than science. Does it though?
Mm-mm.
You're a teen girl.
To her, sure, because she's an idiot.
She is. She's the worst.
Dumbo Jr.
So we get this great Andy and Ephraim scene where I like when Ephraim fucking like drops the angsty teen act and like actually engages Andy and checks him. He asks him how the interview's going, and Andy's like, I'm smiling too much. I feel like I'm going to get TMJ. What does TMJ stand for again?
It's lockjaw. I forget what it is.
It's not lockjaw, actually. It's just a condition. No, my sister has it. It's a thing
TMJ, too much joy. Smiling too much. He's afraid he's going to catch too much joy,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's what it is.
Do you want to finish your real explanation?
No, it's okay. I didn't know you weren't asked. I thought somebody didn't know what it was.
Someone's listening to this and they need this medical advice. If they hear the rest of this description, their life will be saved. The miracle of Everwood never wouldn't.
Miracle of never would.
God.
And then we get the, Andy gives us a nice little deliverable of the theme of the episode. It's like your comics. People want to tune out and be in a world that does what they want it to. Mm. Some people just can't put the book down. Thanks, Eric.
You're welcome.
Joel confronts Andy. You kept Colin's story a secret. He's like, I studied you. I know you. I knew you couldn't be 10 miles from a miracle. You're depriving New York City of your gift.
This fucking creep.
Yeah.
He's a fucking creep.
He is a creep.
Creepy. But yeah, at the end, like, Andy warns Joel, like, hey, you might want to be careful what you write about Colin. And Joel's like, fuck you, I'm going to write what I want to write. Apparently, Julia kept, like, a book of all the news clippings about Andy and called it the Book of Andy.
She must have done a lot of scrapbooks if she did one for, like, every birthday slash holiday and then just accomplishments.
That's why Julia died in the car accident. She was scrapbooking. Oh shit!
Adam, you were about to say like there were little paper scraps all through the car, and it eventually obscured her vision. Or
no, yet again, what I was going to say was not nearly as funny as what y'all came up with.
I know, that's why I wanted to hear it.
Eric. I was going to say that she had so many scrapbooks in the car that it was like weighing the car down.
That works too.
No, but that's so much better. The fact that she's actively like while driving, gotta make a scrapbook of my husband who I'm cheating on.
Oh, geez. She was making a scrapbook of that too. Of her,
scrapbook of her affair?
Yeah. Yep.
Of adultery.
She couldn't help herself.
Oh my God. And Joel tells a little story about Norman Rockwell, how he grew up in, what was it, Brooklyn?
Manhattan.
Manhattan, but he was always watching Irish gang fights.
Yeah. That
inspired him to want to paint a nicer world. Yeah. It's kind of cool, I think, that the Norman Rockwell stuff has been like this implicit kind of inspiration for the show. I think Irv discussed Norman Rockwell in like a narration of maybe like the second or third episode.
I wouldn't know. I don't hear those.
Yeah, I know. But it's kind of cool that the show is bringing it back here near the end of the season.
I wouldn't know.
We get a Miracle of Everwood article montage of everybody like reading the article and being all excited about it. And Harold seems kind of happy that Amy got quoted, even though he didn't, which is a sweet little moment, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, here's what I wanted to bring back about Edna. She's way too excited to read this fucking article.
Mm-hmm.
She hates this fucking guy. She's like tearing into that stack so she can read it right away.
Mm-hmm. I think she's excited that like her granddaughter was quoted.
She's a troll and she loves to hate.
Mm-hmm. Also, this journalist is a hack. He's like, what is his deal? Like, he covered Rwanda, and now his big, bold thing is this dumb line about love versus science.
Mm-hmm.
What a fucking puff piece that he just wrote.
Well, that's what happens to journalists.
All based on bad science, too, because the actual guy said, hey, you might not want to fucking write that, because when this kid goes nuclear and blows up the town, like, you're going to have to make a redaction.
Well, in this case, love is literally more important than science. Like, that's what everybody's choosing to believe. We love Colin. We love that he's back. That's more important than Dr. Brown's dumb science.
Fake news.
Fake news.
What about the fucking stupid shot, too, of like seven people gathered around one copy?
Oh, so that's how they read the news out there. It's better when you read it together.
It's really about the declining economy in the town. They could only afford one copy.
And Ephraim had to pay for his own, or Dr. Brown had to pay for his own.
No, he bought a stack of 10, and he doesn't even have to charge for medicine.
Oh, my dead wife's going to make so many scrapbooks out of this. And then we get to the best storyline of the episode.
The meat of this episode.
The meat. The story A is Delia.
You have to stop following me around, Arnie. I can't. I decided you're my girlfriend. I am not. I decided. Do I have to do anything? Okay, but only if you do everything I tell you. Go get my loose leaf.
Children, take your seats. Thessaly, put that book away. You should know better by now than to be reading in my classroom. I have good news. I just came from the principal's office, where despite my protestations that I wouldn't trust you in public any more than I would a troop of baboons, we discussed your class trip. I think you will be most pleased with our choice. We will be traveling back in time to the ancient Egypt exhibit at the Museum of History.
We're seeing the mummies?
I should point out that this fine idea came from Miss Squeaky Wheel herself. Delia, take a bow.
She's my girlfriend.
I love Arnie. We've seen him before. He's been in some interactions with Delia and like Magilla in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he's decided that Delia is his girlfriend. And, you know, if this storyline were to play out now, I'm sure that the writers would be woke enough to like make it be a story about consent. And Arnie learns that you can't just decide that she's your girlfriend. If she says no, you just accept that and that's okay. And you can still be friends or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in 2003, Delia's like, okay, but only if you do everything I tell you.
I think this is very girl boss energy, which is popular right now. So, like, yeah.
Maybe they would do it that way. Know,
it's like, fine, if I have to participate in this charade, then you're going to be picking up all my toys and stuff. Mm-hmm.
I like that Beth Grant is back as the awful teacher.
Yes.
The worst.
She's like, she's you should know terrible. By now, no reading in my classroom.
Uh-huh.
So cartoonish. It's so funny to me.
Her complaining about the field trip.
Yeah.
Thinking how this would be a good idea to, what, bring a group of baboons out in public? Is that what she said? Something like that?
And then she, like, publicly shames Delia for her having the idea.
Yeah.
This is thanks to Miss Squeaky Wheel herself.
That's not, like, the first public shaming in both scenes. She has to go out of her way to just be, like, horrible of Delia.
She's that every episode she's in. She's
terrible. And I think we've said before, because that actress is amazing. She's so great. Right. I feel so bad that she always plays harsh assholes.
Hey, I question your dedication to Sparkle Motion.
I doubt Sparkle Motion. Right. I love that when Delia stands up to like...
She bows.
Yep. That Arnie looks like positively in awe. He's like, that's my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Is he like... 3 years younger than her.
She is like what Mackenzie's age, and like,
oh, I don't know.
I'm saying like compared to the kids we know, that little boy. We have a short kid. One of our kids is short, but that kid, his even the way he like looks around, and he's like younger, way younger. It's really weird.
Kids are weird.
What are you looking up?
I'm looking up the difference in age between the two. I don't know if we're gonna find an age for Arnie though. Depends on how much he's done.
I feel like
maybe in the schoolhouses back then, they just had all the primary school kids together in one class because they could only have one teacher.
That's ever worked for you.
Yeah.
Brooks Bedore is Arnie.
Brooks? He has a bio.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to find an age for him.
Brooks Bedore. Maybe, does he have a Twitter?
I don't know if this is him. It could be. I think it is. That's him, right?
Voice actor plays Link in Rebecca E. Tripp's Legend of Zelda audio drama. Should I tweet at him?
West Jordan, Utah. You got to follow him.
Wait.
From the Everwood Pod Twitter.
With that picture that...
No, yeah, that's not. Oh, wait. That's totally him with long hair now.
Yeah, the
long hair boy.
Really long hair.
All right. I'm on the Everwood Never Wouldn't Twitter account. By the way, when you get to this episode, everybody, come follow us at Everwood Pod on Twitter.
We have three followers so far.
Oh. It's literally three of us.
It's me, well, you, and our other podcast. It's not even KT.
I didn't even... You're the one that did it. I was like, what's happening on the phone? And then I forgot to do it myself, so...
Walk-in... So I'm going to follow him using the Everwood Never Wouldn't account. I'm not going to tweet at him asking for his age, though. Sorry, everybody.
Oh, come on.
I'm not going to do it.
You should tweet at Gregory's, or you should put a comment on Gregory Smith's Instagram asking him how old Gross Bajor is.
Despite the fact that he never did any scenes with this kid.
Can we get the casting director on Twitter?
Well, you know what? I think, honestly, the answer is in the episode itself, because we do see Delia mummifying Arnie, which does suggest that Arnie is a lot older than he looks.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
He's a mummy, right? He's got a...
Well, listen, I mean, like, King Tut was mummified, and he was pretty young at that point.
When he was mummified, he was young.
Which is what we've witnessed in Everwood.
That's true.
I know.
Delia is so excited to go to this museum. Is it specifically like an Egyptian history museum or what?
I hope not, because that was a not great display.
Because like they were all wearing... sort of decorations that were all very Egyptian. So
Delia wants to live the book from the mixed up files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler.
Mm-hmm.
Basil. Has anybody here read this book? I feel like I might have read it as a kid, but I don't really heard of it at least.
Nope.
The mixed up files? No? Okay.
Nope.
Well, skip that. Delia totally tricks Andy into letting her stay the night at Arnie's, but she has no intention of doing that.
What fucking hijinks has she pulled that we haven't witnessed? That was so easy for her.
Uh-huh.
Oh, actually, this book was read to me when I was in middle school. I was like, oh, it actually is pretty familiar. That's cute. Great.
Well,
there we
fantastic.
Go.
Tell us about it.
Oh, yeah, some kids run away and they go to live in the museum, and it's just basically about them like surviving and on scraps and in their little sleeping bags and stuff.
It's like, I mean, they have a Lord of the Flies situation. Just kind of...
They kill someone over an orange peel.
The security guard gets it and they bury his body. It's pretty good.
At the museum, a girl says to the teacher, I'm a mummy. And the teacher says, not until high school, sweetheart.
Oh my god.
It's funny. Would that be an inappropriate joke now? Like, would they not make that joke now?
No, I think it would. No. I don't think it's inappropriate, like, cultural. I mean, like,
it's inappropriate. She's a jerk.
Yes, it's inappropriate for the teacher to tell the small child.
Right, it's not like she, like, turned to, like, her, like, parent chaperone and like winkingly said, not till you're older. She just has no one, it's no for no one's benefit.
Yeah.
Right. She doesn't even seem amused by
no.
it.
Right.
Like, she's that's miserable. The way the world works.
Yep.
We
get some fun heist music for Delia. Delia in the museum. It's cute. She gets scared. What more is there to say? Do you guys think of the museum?
Again, cool. Like, it seemed like a really terrible exhibit. It felt like it was in like the lobby of a church to me.
Yes.
Like they pulled the pews out of this area and put them in a side room to set up this display. Also, I loved that they had like a big fat chain on the front door. I thought that was a nice little
padlocking up the museum to close it after night.
You judge their ancient Egypt exhibit.
I
but
do.
Need I remind you, the museum curators are grieving.
That one didn't hit, Adam.
Fuck you guys.
I don't know why. That one didn't hit. I normally love that joke. I hated it this time.
Anybody's grieving in this episode, it's Bright.
Okay, well, that's not even funny. That's not a joke. It's just an observation about the episode.
Observation.
Whatever, let's just move on.
Adam, why'd you pick an episode you knew KT would hate?
Yeah, sorry.
We're watching it in order.
Wait, we didn't have to watch.
You could have just skipped this episode.
Would we have noticed? That's a great question. If we just skipped this one, would we have known?
No.
But then you would have missed. I love the recap anytime they show Colin throwing the basketball and screaming.
I like this episode. I have no problem with it. I'm just curious if we did skip it, if we would have known.
Andy, when Joel is talking to him, he's like, my daughter forgot her toothbrush. That's my life now. I'm going to go help her out by giving her the toothbrush at her friend's house.
But he was happy about it. You almost make it sound like he was not, that he was put out. Nope.
I did not mean to make it sound like
I know
that,
you did not.
Thank you for clarifying that. He's like, he's expressing to Joel, he's trying to communicate his contentment with his new life.
Yeah, that was sweet. But also, rookie mistake, Delia.
Yeah,
leaving your toothbrush. Come on.
And we get to see wide-eyed RNA when he's caught in the lie.
I picture that reaction that he had, and that's him being like, wait, I have how many lines in this episode? How long is the camera going to be on me?
To me, that was such an insane kind of scenario where, obviously it was dark outside, and this little girl was left in the museum. Not only in modern days, it would be impossible because the schools are so tight. Like, at least the schools up here in New York, all kinds of things that would never possibly happen. But if it did, the idea that she's been at this museum for so long, he's just finding out about it by going over to that. It's in the dark. Like, how is there not Child Protective Services being called in this situation? Nobody was home to notice she was gone. And she got locked in a museum. And how late was it? And then it just went away. Then it was just like, okay, she's back. Everything's fine. It was so weird.
They knew
to me.
She was gone. They thought that she was at the friend's house.
Yes. But you don't think that that would be a problem? That
you mean legally
for a child that small, for that to be a bigger deal, that no parent knew where the child
I think
was,
that probably the person who would be in the long. Most trouble would be the teacher.
I think what we don't see in the next episode is when the dad calls and she gets fired and stuff, so she's no longer in the show.
Right. I mean, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Beyond the school's problems,
I don't know if it helps, but there is a deleted scene from this episode where Andy, we see him go to the museum, and he has to fight off, several living mummies.
Good. I would much prefer.
How many is several?
Five.
Okay. you could have said five.
But that scene got deleted. The scene that didn't get deleted is Andy putting Delia to bed, saying, yeah, you're in trouble. And also, you gotta promise to stop bossing that shrimpy kid around. Does he say shrimpy?
Shrimpy. Uh-huh.
Yep.
He's not your slave. And Delia, in the line of the episode, says, but I need one.
Jeez Louise.
Which brings us to our second sponsor of this episode, Slaves R Us. Am I allowed to joke about that?
Yeah, joke about that in the one referenced Black Eye episode.
Uh-huh, yep.
Yeah, the one episode where they decide to have her be meta.
Yep, uh-huh.
They have to have the girl say, but I need slaves. All right, so that's problematic. But I do like the when Andy, in his later conversation with Joel, when he says, I found my daughter tonight because I noticed a toothbrush in a cup by a sink. And last night I had a pretty long conversation with my son. My life is great. Ephraim and Andy at the end, Ephraim's all mad about the article. Andy's just being all silent. Yep, yep, nope. Mm-hmm. And then the narration, which if you missed it, Irv talks about Norman Rockwell and quotes Norman Rockwell, who said that, my work excludes the sordid and the ugly. I paint life as I would like it to be. Oh. Yeah, okay.
I liked Andy specifically reading the pine cone, the Everwood pine cone. Uh-huh. That was nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's great.
Did you notice the headline?
No.
It was something like local wildlife spotted near town. or something like that. Local. I don't know. I don't know if I got the phrasing exactly.
Right. I missed that. While everybody else is, yes, looking at the mm-hmm. New York Magazine, he's looking at the Everwood Pinecone. Mm-hmm. That's cute. Very nice little detail. So, yeah, that's the miracle of Everwood. I think the miracle, the real miracle of this episode is that KT watched it without blowing their head off.
Yeah, why?
Was able to get through it because it sucked, right? It's a bad episode.
I was not enchanted by it. That's the problem. Like, I didn't find anything in it that I really liked. I mean, okay, Dr. Abbott pretending to be a country doctor was precious.
Definitely the best part.
But it was even not enough. Like, yeah.
They were trying to be super cute with Delia in the museum. And even that's
and
like,
that's
yeah, I get
cute
it.
Too. It's cute.
Delia's best when she is either with adults mm-hmm. or with other kids that can kind of act.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. So, and like the mummies in that museum could not act at all.
Was that why the scene was deleted?
Yeah. Plus it was, but it was weird because Andy was like, Treat Williams was trying his best to like shout and be angry.
Yeah.
He couldn't do it.
But he just couldn't do it well because he's just too nice and his breath, it was just too breathy and nice.
Yeah. Hey, mommies. Stop. What are we doing here?
Is that Mark Wahlberg?
Hey, say hi to your mom for me.
Hey, mummies. It's all right.
God damn it.
All right. It's time for our favorite segment, TV Time Time.
Oh, yay.
Theme song. Are you going to Everwood Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary, TV time. That's it.
I did a spoof of that song for a pork fried dice intro very recently.
Yes, you did, didn't you?
Oh, and I haven't heard it yet.
Nope, I just did it a couple weeks ago.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go through the comments on episode season 1, episode 19.
Here we go. All right. Strap in.
Some lot of gifts.
Great.
4 years ago, TV Time user Clay Evans, who does not have a profile picture.
Russian bot.
Russian bot. The United States cultural significance around Everwood. Clay Evans wrote, amazing episode. That has 7 likes, and I don't think I'll be giving back the other likes.
That's it.
That's all he wrote was amazing. Oh,
he
took time to write that.
I was going to say, maybe that's Treat Williams on TV Time.
No, he would say bravo.
Bravo. He just said it a lot on Twitter.
I know.
3 years ago, Angel Piguero, or as the Spaniards would say, Angel Piguero. That was offensive. Parker, you can cut that out.
Was it?
I don't even know.
You said Spaniards.
And if you were specifically going with Spaniards, I guess there were no S's to do a little soft F.
I'm not going to Barcelona. Angel wrote, along with a gif of Sheldon from The Big Bang Theory hyperventilating into a brown paper bag.
Uh-huh.
He wrote, me watching Colin behavior, ...
Wow.
He misspelled Colin with 2 L's. I'm assuming that's because he's a Spaniard. And English is not his first language. Jesus Christ. Cut this, Parker.
Cut the whole episode.
Like, is it like 90% the reason you look at Everwood on TV Time is waiting for someone to use one of your GIFs?
No. I don't expect anybody.
Oh, it's 95%.
Yeah. 3 years ago, also, TV Time user Paula CR, which we've seen numerous times before,
okay,
wrote with a gif from New Girl, which is a show I've never watched.
Same.
Of a black man putting his fingers on his temple in exasperation. The bridge of his nose. Thank you. Paula CR wrote, ah, Wake up, people, in all caps. This is going to end bad. I just know it. Eye roll emoji. Ephraim has always been my favorite. Protect him at all costs.
As if anything's going to happen.
Costs.
Oh, my goodness.
She has 17 likes. Angel had 9 likes. I don't want to like any of these.
Yeah.
Also 3 years ago, TV Time user Carlene Laurent, with a silent J maybe, wrote, Colin, again with 2 L's. Are you guys idiots?
It's C-O-L-O-N.
Parker, cut this out.
Colin is starting to freak me out. Like, seriously, how can everybody be so blind? Amy is not even realizing he's being dangerous, but I'm sure he'll end up hurting her too. Good prediction, baby. Let the drama continue, .. And a little grumble emoji.
A grumble emoji.
I'll give that a like, I guess. And that's the biggest part of this segment, is hearing me decide which one I like. 2 months ago, TV Time user Francisca wrote,
just finishing up recording my Everwood podcast.
OMG, poor baby Bright, followed by 10 exclamation points.
Whoa.
Along with a gif from presumably Parks and Rec of Bright, of Andy Dwyer saying, I'm not crying, okay? I'm allergic to jerks. She has 0 likes on this comment. Ooh. I'm giving it a like, not because of
a Chris Pratt fan, Adam.
I'm giving it a like because I want to stir up people's
Chris Pratt fan
notification that somebody liked her comment, and maybe they'll make her be like, huh, so people are watching Everwood. Maybe I'll go look for any Everwood podcasts that are
Then you gotta wait on all these likes until we release.
Yeah,
and then you gotta go into TV Time and like them all at once.
She'll find the Twitter. Okay.
I'm sure she will. Now, someone liked this. Let me search for a podcast about it.
I would, and I have. Fuck all y'all. Let's do ratings, and let's mix it up. I'll go last.
Oh, KT, gosh. I don't want to go first.
Why not mix it
Stop
up?
Stop complaining! I don't want to go last. I don't want to go first. You just don't want to rate this episode.
I don't, because the reality is if you want to go first, go ahead.
So we do it 3 ratings. One in anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
One while watching your enjoyment of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then one in retrospect, given our conversation and my arguments for why it's the best episode ever.
Okay.
What?
Episode, I was going into it with a 4, because... that's just what I expect most of the time. And then while watching it, I guess the best takeaway for me from this episode was when Ephraim and his dad were, I call him his dad because I honestly can't remember his name most of the time. When they had their moment at the end or whatever, when he actually said when he actually came back and was honest with him or whatever, it's nice to see them when Ephraim does throw him a bone, but also he was genuinely concerned. So he was just like, yeah, this is the time when I put aside my teen angst and say some shit that could actually save somebody potentially.
All right, daddy issues. Give us a number rating.
going out of it, 3 because of the slicked hair, and I can't take it. He's evil now.
Wait, because of the chair?
Because of Colin's slicked hair.
Colin's slicked hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait, I thought you liked his hair as an indication of his evil.
It is an indication of his evil. I do not like.
Jerome does not like evil, Adam.
Okay. It's a 4.53 from Jerome. KT?
Okay. So in anticipation, I was definitely a 5 because I remember being curious last week. I didn't even feel well today, and I was still I really want to watch Everwood. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
This episode disappointed me. God damn it. All right. So But it's weird. It's complicated because Chris Pratt got punched a lot. And I got really excited during that scene. But also I like Dr. Abbott in his little doctor thing going on, his country doctor shtick. I do think the Delia Egyptian Museum thing was adorable. I just don't think, like, overall, it was, like, a good episode. Like, I just felt like it was just too much Colin's having a bad time. It's like, I just want to get to the end of the Colin's having a bad time and find out what the fuck is going on. Because I know I have to wait another week now to find out what the fuck is going on in Colin's head. So I give this episode a slow ass 3. But sure. Then during our discussion, like, and honestly, I think that rating is even colored by the discussion because I love listening to you guys talk about it. And even though I didn't always agree this time, like, you know, it's always fun. So I think probably a 4 afterwards, even though I didn't agree and stuff.
3-4.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you were like, this is one I didn't have to talk during. I just got to relax and doodle and listen.
Hey, well, I was trying to think of things, but in general, I just wasn't. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's why my review isn't great. I'm trying to be nice, but I wasn't really excited and, like, curious anymore about Colin. I was like, okay, my curiosity has already peaked. Like, I already know there's something going on. Yes, the violence, like, oh man, that's another level. But then it was like, okay, it really is going to head the way of he's going to hurt or kill somebody. And it's obviously it's not going to be a murder because it's not a CSI show, but it's, you know, something bad's going to happen. And it probably will be to Amy and fucking Amy. And then I'm going to have to feel bad for Amy. God damn Amy. It. Yeah, murdered. That sounds great.
Then they know they're gonna have to listen to you be sad about it, Adam.
No, like, obviously you don't want Amy to be murdered. I just wish that she would move to another country, so I don't.
Well, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, she moves to Sokovia. Or, no, not Sokovia. Lagos. Ah, fuck. All because WandaVision's on, and I'm just.
I haven't seen that.
Marvel mind.
Boy, it looks like it's going to be a while
don't
before.
Don't look ahead.
Before.
Don't say anything. Don't spoil
before
anything.
We get to the end of the season.
Who do you think you are, Adam? Don't spoil anything.
So we have 4-5-3 from Jerome. 5-3-4 from KT. Eric?
All right. So in anticipation of 5, I always look forward to watching Everwood and I want to be watching it more than I am.
Yes.
Do you remember last week when we were like kind of considering doing 2 in a row?
Yeah.
Could you imagine if this were the episode we stayed up until 1:30 in the morning watching?
I would quit.
Down.
It just occurred to me that if we had done that, this is what we would have
yes,
watched.
Yes, that would have been a big bummer.
You would have been so mad.
Yeah. I'd been like,
your
I don't
star
want to record anything right now.
Would not have been as high.
Oh, no.
By right. far.
Because even right now, I think I'm regretting yeah, some of my feel, stars. Mm-hmm. I'm like icky about my reviews that I just did.
All right. So during the episode, I give it a 4. I had fun watching this episode. The biggest drawback to me was just the fucking reporter guy. I didn't.
Yeah, him too. What the fuck?
The scene with the principal also was like, this doesn't
yes,
make sense to me.
It's bizarre.
But then the reporter, I don't know, whether it was the actor, the direction, the writing, I don't know.
It was
just did not work for me.
Sorry, actor.
But everything else I liked. I liked the Colin stuff. I liked the Delia stuff, etc. So 4 during. And then afterwards, like, you guys, you just, like, brought me down about it.
Yeah, sorry.
Like, I'm, like, doubting myself. I'm doubting Everwood. I'm doubting Adam for having us watch it.
Are you doubting your commitment to Sparkle Motion?
Yeah, I am.
I mean, in the grand total of the show, how many, like, quote-unquote filler episodes have there been that don't advance the plot, really?
No, don't make me think about that. See, that's the problem. I have to give it two in whatever retrospect. So 5-4-2.
All right. Fascinating ratings. I think I'd give it a 4-4-4. I think that I, you know, was kind of excited about it, but like as much as I'd be excited about any Everwood, but the fact that like I honestly in my mind was conflating or like forgetting, like kind of combining this episode, the next episode, even just that was enough for me to be like, wait, yeah, which episode is this? So it's like kind of like if it was really good, I had a sense of like if it was really good, I'd remember it more clearly.
Are you saying that next episode also sucks?
No.
I think he's more saying that his mind kind of skips this one.
Okay, he just said conflating them. I just was worried that it was...
Yeah, conflate's the wrong word. Just kind of blurring the line between them because, you know...
Yeah, this one disappears, I understand.
While watching, yeah, a 4. And yeah, afterwards a 4. I think that this show is not at its best when it is kind of pinning all of its kind of storytelling energy on the Collins storyline.
Yes.
Like it's kind of like it's the weakest part of the show. Like the best show part of the show is like the character work and the kind of like just more interesting storylines when they're doing. And so usually right in most of season one, you've got the adult storylines and you've got the teen storylines. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. And I think what's tricky about the Collins stuff as we reach kind of the end game of season one is that they are so much the same,
right?
Because the dramatic comatose boyfriend wakes up, that storyline becomes kind of, it takes center stage, and then the adults have to think about that instead of, you know, teaming up to investigate a murder.
Like, yeah.
Everyone, like, they don't get to have fun. They just, mm-hmm. everything just kind of like starts like getting into this one big tunnel of like, oh, it's all about Colin. And
right.
Which I think, you know, was probably real. I think, you know, it was exciting at the time, maybe especially for the teen viewers such as myself. But yeah, it's just, it's not showcasing the best kind of parts of Everwood. Mm-hmm. So I totally hear that. I think it makes sense that our ratings are kind of so kind of diverse. I think this is the most like diverse range of ratings that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So that brings us to the final segment is predictions.
What do we got, Adam? Yeah. Lay it on us.
Episode 20 is called Moonlight Sonata.
Oh, a piano thing.
Oh, yeah. It's like real exciting.
Does Ephraim have to find the right tune to play to calm down Colum?
Yeah, Colum.
Colum. I didn't mean to say Colum.
His name should be Colum.
He is so like Gollum and Smeagol.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's the savage beast.
Yes.
Okay, and then like he has to go to the bathroom and stop playing, and Colum starts freaking out, and he has to rush back, and they have to all work together. Someone it's has like to hold a cup for him to pee in while he plays. And
oh my God.
Is that what Moonlight Sonata is about?
Could be. Good prediction. Any other predictions? I don't let Jerome predict. Because you might have some...
He was just reading the episode descriptions.
Yeah. Trust me, I never remember anything about it. My prediction had something to do with Sailor Moon because Moonlight makes me think of tuxedo masks. So
we don't talk about anime on this podcast.
Yeah,
we're
probably wrong.
Except in reference to Ephraim.
It's not Sailor waiting to turn into Moon. It's Moon waiting to turn into Sailor.
That's it. Yeah.
Wow.
KT, predictions about Moonlight Sonata.
Well, I said piano thing. Could it be
that could be your prediction?
Could it be something to do with? Because I mean, it could be something to do with one of these like double applying ones or something, piano something. Like Ephraim's got to perform something, but Moonlight Sonata. Like some part of me wants to connect it to like werewolves or something and brains, and then Colin is going crazy. He's turning into a werewolf.
I'll clarify. The episode title is spelled out Moonlight, and then in parentheses, so, comma, not a dot, 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 end parentheses. Moonlight, so not a...
All right, I predict that it's a Seinfeld episode.
Yeah. It's just a Seinfeld episode. We bought the rights to just air a Seinfeld episode.
I'll watch it. Hey, that sounds good after this one.
Five stars in anticipation. Yeah. Right early.
And then Bright does the get out thing, but actually pushes someone into a bus in the street or something.
Well, this has been Everwood Never Wouldn't. Next week, we officially become Seinfeld, Sign Dead. I guess. My jokes have been really bad tonight.
I don't.
It's because KT is 0% engaged.
Oh, I'm engaged.
I think KT's been very engaged. And I thought KT did a great job of expressing their feelings about the episode. I think we all did. I think we all deserve to give ourselves a pat on the back.
Yay. A pat on my back.
You drove.
I did it. Itchy.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. If you did, we shall say goodnight with the ritual singing of the Everwood theme song, all four of us together.
Jerome's favorite part.
Yeah, of course.
All right, here we go.
And a one, and a two, and a one, two, three, four. I'm not doing this until you do it along.
Yeah, right, I'm ready. Right, yeah,
one, two, three, four.
How's it going again?
Jerome's being a piece of garbage. I'll just do it for us both then. No, it's not high enough. Stop. I'll just do it. I lost it. Fighting.
Now you see how I got out of doing everything as a kid. You do it poorly, and no one asks you to do it again.
All right. Daddy
we
issues.
Love it.
We did it! Bye!